This episode of RFK Refugees is brought to you by Pitch Invaders. Pitch Invaders wants to remind you, the pitch is for the people. They are the ultimate apparel destination tailored for the soccer community. Use code VAMOS for an exclusive 15% discount on all purchases at pitchinvadersusa.com. That's pitchinvadersusa.com. Welcome into a Friday edition of RFK Refugees for our Patreons first and then everybody else second. We have with us Ashley Hatch. Ashley, thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
I think this is time number three. I was just going through our archives. It's either three or four. Similarly, Andy was on last week. I don't know the number. So we told her that if it is three and the next time is four, there's an equity stake coming your way. So we'll just we'll talk to your agent. And make sure make sure everything's all right.
Sounds good.
Yes, I thought so. So again, thanks for taking the time. We're 1 week into the season. I think it's we want to get started, sort of talk about the off season. It was another off season of change. I talked to Andy about it. I said that's all we've ever talked about basically since the show has started. It's been about what changes it this year, but that this time it felt like managed change or like educated change, like it was a part of a larger plan. Is that how you felt coming into yet another introduction season for yourself?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with Andy. I think all of these changes, well, not all of them, but the changes were expected. Just I feel like change is such a natural and normal part of professional soccer. And the way things ended last year, I think all of us were pretty disappointed at falling short of the playoffs, and so we knew that things needed to change. Of course, us as players didn't know exactly what those changes would be, but we knew that we wanted to get better, and so that would probably require some change. And we have a lot of confidence in, like, Michelle and her vision for the club, and so I think we were all pretty prepared for whatever that change may be.
Yeah, I think after the last two seasons, to your point, there was going to be something different here, and it seems like, you know, once again, off the field investment continues. Sort of the figuring out what can be done from an ownership perspective to make things better off the field, and that sort of continues. So that's, you've seen it all. You've been there for most of it. Andy's seen it all. She's sort of like the Boyd's Maryland to Audi Field Loudon pipeline. It's a long continuum that you've all been witness to.
Yes.
What was this offseason like for you as you got ready to, you know, obviously last season didn't end as a group the way everybody wanted. How did you spend your offseason? Was it any different than any usual or how did it go?
Offseason was good. I took some time off after the season had ended and after the last national team camp concluded. And so I was able to actually go on a vacation for once with my husband. We went to Mexico, which was really nice. And then after that, we went to Arizona for Christmas and spent most of my time training there because of the warm weather. My sister is a club soccer coach, so I was able to get some field access, which is really nice, and kind of just focused on the things that I wanted to focus on, just individual development, lots of finishing, and then just like preparing for the season, getting back in shape and getting back into the swing of things. So yeah, just focusing on the things that like I wanted to improve on individually.
That's a healthy off season. I feel like sometimes players are like, I took no days off. I immediately got in the gym. I spent the entire off season in the gym. I feel like what you did. Yeah. And I mean, if you look at like the way your seasons have generally gone for the last couple of years, like your output, you do the business, you know, pretty much what an Ashley Hatch season is going to look like. So it's, you're knowing your body as you're going along, you know what you need. It's great. It's and you get a vacation.
Yeah.
So excellent.
Yes, exactly.
We were telling Andy.
Yeah.
We were telling Andy that like, actually, Ted, my co-host, was telling Andy, like, what is going to be, we were talking about Instagram, and she's like, obviously, Ashley Hatch has the Instagram universe handled. She's certainly got, you've got to come up with another lane, and we're going to spitball on that. But it's a kind of a corny question, but like, that, I feel like that's a really good way to let people know different sides of your personality, and like, and like how you are at home. And it's, they're produced. Yeah. Like, you're doing a good job. It's not like it's, you're just like, you know, kick sticking the phone out and then it goes out. You're doing a little editing. What's, have you enjoyed sort of showing people the other side of your personality and sort of building out your, I don't say brand, but building out the way people know you.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it's social media in general can be kind of a challenge, especially as athletes, when our main focus is just like being 100% our best every time we step out on the field. And so I've always struggled with the balance of like, okay, like I want to like let people know who I am off the field, but I also want to balance like just like having that privacy. And so like, how do I juggle this? And also like, I feel like fear of like judgment or rejection is always something that we like battle with as well as professional athletes being in the spotlight. But I have a pretty good team surrounding me with my agent and my husband, and we all kind of work together and just shared like what my values are and what my mission is as a professional athlete. And that's just to be like, just to share what I'm like as a person and just to spread lots of like fun and positive content and kind of just like show who I am off the pitch. And so just being myself has made it a lot easier and not being like too like, oh, I need it to be like this or that. We do have a friend that I work with and I just create the content and he puts it together, like you said, which makes it also really easy because it takes a lot of time off my hands. I just focus on having fun. And if I want to create a video of me baking something, then I just like, hey, Jeff, we're making something and Bjorn will edit it later. But yeah, it's been fun. And I've really enjoyed kind of exploring that side of me and sharing it with all my followers. And I've just really, really enjoyed it.
I feel like I can't tell, obviously, and I'm going to ask you this because I'm curious, like publicly, it feels like soccer players in this country, and I think even specifically NWSL players, do not appear to get a bunch of like highly visible like abuse on social media. Are your DMs, is the outside the same as the inside? It seems like people are generally supportive. Like there's going to be some criticism, but people are kind of shockingly nice overall. Is that sort of what it's like even in your private messages and stuff?
Yeah. I would say that's so. Awesome. I would say that's a fair assessment. Yeah. I've like one thing that's been really fun about like creating more content that's not related to soccer is I'm able to relate to others. So like I'll bake some cookies or try a new recipe and someone will be like, oh my gosh, I've tried that, or I can't wait to try that. Or it's just another avenue for me to connect to a lot of our fans and to just my followers and stuff. And so that's been a pleasant surprise, just getting those messages and like seeing how it makes people's day. But yeah, you're right. It's been overwhelmingly positive, which I'm very grateful for.
I think the fans of the rest of the leagues in the United States should take a lesson, I feel like, from you know, not being insane and not being mean and miserable. So this preseason, we were cracking jokes beforehand, sort of in press conferences and stuff before the season started, like, well, seeing none of the games nor hearing any of the reports, I guess we'll have to predict that the Spirit will finish in first place and go undefeated, because we have no way to say otherwise. Did you feel like you got a lot out of your preseason? Obviously, trying out new things, new coaches, new tactics. Did you feel like are you coming into the season sort of feeling like you're supposed to be doing, and you feel good?
Yeah, I would say so. Like we talked about earlier, there was a lot of changes and having, you know, new coach, interim coach, lots of new players, young players, some returning players, players coming from the free agency chaos. There was a lot to work on in the preseason, and I feel like we went to work in the preseason, and I'm excited for where we're at, but where we can continue to grow. We have a lot of really good pieces, and it's like, I think the recipe is just getting the right pieces working together and all on the field at the same time, and also figuring out like continuing to grow in our style of play, especially since it's new for a lot of us. And so I'm happy with where we're at and where we're going to continue to grow.
Let's talk about week one. I think that will be safe to say not the outcome or process maybe that you wanted coming in. I think the thing that was really sort of jarring was like, XG never tells the whole story, but like the XG chart said like that was the lowest expected goals generated by a team since 2016. So not the start we want. But also, too, like if you look at that lineup, the number of rookie draft pick players instantly inserted into the starting lineup, I think, surprised a lot of people. But Andy sort of said, these players are actually really ready to go, and that's how it's looked in training. I assume it was not a surprise to you either how young the team looked and how sort of new look everything was. Is that right?
Yeah. It wasn't a surprise to any of us, obviously, because we had been working on this and training with all these players in preseason. But I could see from an outsider's perspective of seeing that many rookies on the field, but they're all very seasoned and already like professionals, in my opinion, just the way they carry themselves and the way they came into preseason. So yeah, that's how I feel about it.
I'm already sort of, I just got a little tinged when you put the quotes. I remember Lena Solano basically told me to stop calling them that and call them young players. So I already dropped the ball on that. That was a stated message.
We're all getting used to as well.
Sure. I can imagine. So, just want to talk through how that game went from your perspective. I think that we talked sort of about the chance generation situation, but it felt and looked very much like an early season performance, right? I think there was a struggle to build out of the back, struggle the whole possession, not a lot of opportunities, chances, obviously the chalked off goal that probably should have counted. And now you've got your starting goalkeeper back because another red card rescinded. So good job again on that one. But just wanted to talk through your, as that game was going on, what you were seeing, what you were feeling as far as, what went wrong, I guess, basically is how I put it.
Yeah. I mean, as a player, I think every single player in the field was frustrated with how it went. Like you said, we weren't able to create any real quality chances. But with the style of play that we're trying to play, I feel like we were trying to do the things that we had been practicing. I think with it being the first game and all that had happened in the first 10 seconds of the game, it was challenging. I think we all could have done a little bit better job of reading the game, working together and finding those openings and swinging the ball a little bit quicker. But when I watched it back, and I know when a lot of players watched it back, we saw glimpses of goodness that we were like, okay, like this is what we're trying to do. We know we can do a lot better in these areas. And so I think we were all a little bit like more excited and hopeful for like, okay, the next game, like we're going to get this, we're going to be better. And I feel like our press worked fairly well because every time we pressed Seattle, they gave us the ball back. They just kicked it long. Or just pass it back to us. So that's one positive that I think a lot of us took away from it. It's like, okay, like we can do this. We can get the ball back quickly. We just need to take care of it a little bit better. I feel like those are a few of the areas that we can continue to grow, and the relationships in the field, I feel like can continue to grow as well. And just like mixing around player personnel, using everyone's strengths in the right positions, I think is something that we're also navigating. And yeah, I think it was, we'll chalk it up to being a first game for sure, but I think it was huge for us in learning a lot about ourselves and what we can do and what we can improve on.
So it sounds like heads are still up here in the training leading up to Saturday's opener. It seems like people are still, it was progression towards what you wanted, and there were some signs that things are still going in the right direction.
Yeah, for sure.
Good. Well, that's good. FC obviously coming off of a victory in their first match. That's not, that's great. They're going to be rolling in with confidence. They've got a pretty talented roster. You've got some familiar faces coming back. What are, I remember last year we asked Mark Parsons on like a week to week basis, like about, how are you preparing for this team? And he would basically just say like, we're just kind of just doing us. Like, we just think that as long as we do our stuff, that it doesn't matter. And that's a good, that's an answer. Certainly that's people that, but new coach, new regime. How have you sort of prepared? Are you preparing any differently for this match than the previous match, or just still trying to build into your systems and get more comfortable with the changes?
I would say a little bit of both. Yeah, I would say a little bit of both. We have kind of this cadence of first training back. We are going to review the game with the perspective of us and what we did and what we can continue to improve on. Then the next day, which was today for us, is, looking at the opponent, kind of anticipating what we could see from them, it's nice. We actually have a game that they played in before, it's kind of like we're making guesses because we hadn't had any games in the league yet. But so, looking at clips from their previous game, what are their tendencies with the ball? What are their tendencies without the ball? And then like, what are we going to do? So I think the, 80-90% of the focus is what we are going to do. But I also think it's beneficial to know, you know, what we could anticipate, what some like special players' tendencies are and how we can stop them. So yeah, those are some things that we focus on. And a lot of that is over film and over video, which I think is really, really helpful.
There, I won't get into it because it's breaking and it's still not certified yet. Still not really released by the team yet. But there are rumors about new signings coming in June. There was one, you know, the team Twitter account was basically teasing people about it, I think, a couple weeks ago. And that's fine. So this might be that signing. But it feels very much, even before this signing, it feels very much like, all right, we've got a young team. We got a new coach. The new coach isn't here till June. We've got our assistant coach in place. We're building. We're going to give these players who are seasoned, but still early in their career, major minutes. We want to see what we've got. But it feels like in June, or when the summer transfer window opens and Jonah comes in, it's like a second start of the season, basically. It's like a restart, basically. And the season, you know, the league is structured in a way that most teams have the opportunity to make those playoffs. So you're not really, you know, a slow start at the beginning of the season, while isn't ideal, it's certainly overcomable. Is it a strange, I don't want to say the team's not finished yet, but there is space in the team. There's international roster spots available. The team is signing players or talking about signing players. What is it? What's the sensation in the team where, you know, sort of like, we're not done yet. This is not the complete unit. This is who's here and we're working, but does that feel any kind of way, or are you kind of just focusing on the job that you have to do, and when new players get here, you'll deal with it?
I feel like that makes sense from like an outsider's perspective or a fan's perspective of, you know, all the noise kind of going on in media and this is going to happen, that's going to happen. But in terms of what it feels like here with the spirit, it's like we're full steam ahead. We're on this train. And then in the summer, we're just going to maybe pick up a few more people and we're going to keep going. That's exactly what it feels like. We had a conversation yesterday as a team after training, like, we want to win. Like, we're going to obviously continue to grow, but we also want to win now. And I think we can win and we can grow at the same time. And so that's the mindset. That's my mindset, certainly. And I know it's the mindset of all of our players and our coaching staff. And so, that's how it is here. We're excited to continue to grow, but I wouldn't say we're holding out or waiting for any changes, because we've been putting in the work. We just need to keep competing.
And there's a lot of games until June, and that would be, if you really were waiting, that would be that would be a miserable first half of the season if that were the case.
Exactly.
Got a question from a listener. I want to make sure that I get in here. James Lambert says, I admire how Hatch has continued developing as a player much later into a career when compared with most players who often plateau earlier. What has allowed her to set herself apart in this way? So I guess she's saying, you're still growing. You're still building your skill set up year by year. You made it sound like you've been in the league forever. You've been in the league for a while, but we'll not get carried away with that. But
I appreciate that.
yeah, of course. It's way always too early to call someone a veteran. It's always too early to talk about someone's career like in the rear view when you're talking to them. But you're very we talked about this a long time ago. First time, you're like, you spend time on your sports psychology, you spend time in your visualization, you spend time on the mental side of the game, and that has surely helped you. But physically as well, you continue to grow. Is it just that you just the way you see yourself as a professional? That's just your job, is to build and build and build?
Yeah, I mean, I would say complacency as a professional athlete is probably our worst enemy. If you're complacent with where you're at, you're not going to continue to grow, especially with all the younger players coming in that want to beat you out, or the players that are above you that have been here and doing it longer. So I think just for me, making sure that I'm never like comfortable with where I'm at, always like pushing myself in all aspects of my game, whether that be the mental side or the physical side or the technical side. Whatever it may be. And every year is a new season, new opportunity with new challenges, new players, new coaches. So, there's so much opportunity to continue to climb and continue to grow. And so just like seeking out those opportunities and doing everything I can in my power just to continue to improve my game and help contribute to the team is something that I focus on a lot.
This is a question that's probably a better question to someone that's earlier on in their career. Again, not trying to make you sound like you've been around forever, but you've had all these coaches, and normally you'd have to feel like you have to prove yourself each single year. You have to, like, this person doesn't know my game, I have to explain. So I would say you're a known quantity for any coaches coming in. Like, well, she's our nine. This is where she's going to play. This is what she's going to do. Do you feel like that's a challenge for some other players that are maybe second, like your Paige Mateyers, your second year players who really impressed under a previous coach, and having to like reprove yourself and figure out how do I fit in this regime? Do you feel that tension on some of the players on the roster, so the second or third year players?
Yeah, I think those thoughts kind of go through everyone's mind at some point. You know, new coach, you don't know exactly what, you know, their ideas or their intentions for our style of play or players. And I mean, I feel like coach sometimes tends to have, you know, a favorite player because of this or that or whatever it may be. And so I think those thoughts can be dangerous because they can be limiting. So I think focusing on like what you have to offer is really important, and just finding that confidence to just be yourself and play like you can and your best as soon as possible is really, really important. But I feel like we have a really good environment with the group of girls that we have here. So if we did see someone that was maybe not as confident, I think we would do a good job of lifting each other up and be like, hey, like, we know you can do more. We know you're better than this, like, get out of your head, basically. But I also think that pressure of a new coach is good because it pushes us all to just be a little bit better. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I think it's also important to make sure you don't get in your own way when a new opportunity comes with a new coach.
Makes sense. Ash, and you guys have had a lot of those. So if that was not a good thing, there would be lots more struggles than there have been. Ashley, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. Yet again, third timers club. We talked about the great content you're putting out. Where can people find you on social media if they want to learn about your life on the field and then your cookie recipes and whatnot?
Instagram is my most used platform. Mm-hmm. My handle is Ash_Smash33. Old college nickname, so don't make fun of me for it, but can't change it.
Set now. Saturday afternoon. Is it afternoon? What time is kick? I think it's afternoon. Evening. Saturday evening. Make sure you're at Audi Field for the home opener against BFC. Hopefully we turn our luck around here and see some goals and see some exciting play. Ashley, thank you again for joining, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, thanks.
Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the Ashley Hatch interview, and we want to get ready for this weekend. We've got Joey Zanaboni, the radio voice of St. Louis City SC. Joey, thanks for joining.
Hey, John. Thanks so much for having me.
So DC United had a bit of a letdown last week, and it looks like St. Louis had a bit more of an exciting match in a positive way out in L.A. This season, they're undefeated, which is something you say when a team has won one game and played four and hasn't lost. You definitely still say undefeated, mm-hmm. but it's been a season of draws so far. After a record-breaking season last year, how does St. Louis look so far this season?
Yeah, I would say comparable, and I think we're a little more talented actually on the field than we were last year. Trying for the second straight season to go undefeated in the first five. Last year, all those were wins. This year, hopefully it's two wins and three draws after this weekend when we take on DC United. But, you know, I've been really impressed by the team. I think pretty strong on the edges this year. Definitely have gotten a boost from Thomas Totlin, have gotten some other key contributors as well, including former DC United Chris Durkin, who was acquired via trade in the offseason. He's such an energy guy, and what a battery he has to get all over the field and influence the game in a lot of different ways. So I've been really excited with it. I've been very, very happy. Obviously, there's a couple that you wish could have been wins rather than draws, but same time, the team's shown a lot of resilience in the last minutes of games. Scored in the 88th minute in LA, scored in the 93rd minute, I believe it was, the weekend before in Austin. And, you know, on the road, anywhere you go, it's really tough. Team fell behind early out in Carson against the Galaxy, gave up a goal about 2 minutes into the game, were able to still keep the composure and show some determination, show some resilience, and come back. So I thought it was a good performance. And getting back to St. Louis, team always plays well here.
Let's talk about Chris Durkin for a second, because I think there were a lot of fans that had uncertain feelings about seeing him leave. Obviously, academy product, he leaves, he comes back. He also played in almost every position on the field at a certain point. He was a Swiss Army knife, at sometimes playing right back against probably everyone's better judgment, but sometimes he had to go there. What is obviously you said he's a spark plug. He's the engine room for the midfield. What is your takeaway been him so far? Is he playing in the six? Is he just a defensive midfielder that's moving the ball? What's he look like for St. Louis?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit like DC where they moved him around the field a little bit, but I think the starting place is always the six with him, and he's had to be huge because you know Edward Louvin, who was finalist for MLS Newcomer of the Year last year, who was really the engine that made so much run for St. Louis at 20 goal contributions last season, he's sidelined currently with a hamstring injury. And so Durkin's had to be even bigger a lot of the time. Bradley Carnell's been starting Durkin and Louvin kind of at the back of the midfield. And Chris has had to play an even larger role. But to see him engineer a couple of things on the offensive end as well, it's really, really impressive. Very earnest individual, very caring individual, someone who's a great guy as well as a great player, it seems. So it's been a pleasure to watch him play and to see the way that that's been able to strengthen the defense a little bit between him and Totland. I think Anthony Markanek's had a nice year. Nicholas Dürer, who was acquired from the Danish Super League, has gotten some minutes here over the last couple of games. Very, very impressed with what they've been able to do on the defensive side.
Yeah, Chris is a great interview too. He's just a good kid. He's getting older now. I'm still going to call him that because I'm always going to be older, exactly as older as I am from him today, as I always have been.
24 years old, still a kid, right?
Yeah, I agree.
That's incredible. He's played, 6 years in the MLS. He's still only 24 years old. He's had some chances overseas, good league in Belgium as well. So to have that combination of youth and experience, it really fits the player profile that Lutz Fahnenstiel, our sporting director, and the head coach, Bradley Carnell, have been looking for.
I just saw in the wrap-up that the game in Los Angeles was his 100th appearance, which, again, at 26 is bananas, considering he left and came back.
Yeah, it's almost silly, yeah, to think about that kind of experience at a young age.
Are you eager to fuel the growth of soccer in the U.S. while showcasing your passion for the sport? Look no further than Pitch Invaders, the ultimate online apparel destination tailored for the soccer community. Based in Arlington, Virginia, Pitch Invaders offers a dynamic range of casual and athletic gear designed to let you express your love for the game both on and off the pitch. But Pitch Invaders isn't just about trendy merch, it's a movement. They proudly partner with local soccer clubs and associations, actively contributing to the growth and expansion of the sport across the U.S. Community is at the heart of everything that they do. As a special treat for our podcast listeners, use code VAMOS for an exclusive 15% discount on all purchases at pitchinvadersusa.com. By supporting Pitch Invaders, you're not just showing your love for soccer, you're also backing a brand committed to fostering community and making a difference in the sport. Don't miss out on this opportunity to rep your love for soccer, support the community, and look absolutely fantastic while doing it. Visit pitchinvadersusa.com today and join us in proclaiming that the pitch is for the people. I want to talk too about sort of what went the other direction in that trade. Lucas Bartlett has slotted directly in as a starting center back for this team. I think myself and my co-host and some of the other folks were seeing him as a depth signing, not necessarily immediately starting in to our starting defense. Jared Stroud sort of similarly, when he came in, it was sort of a question of like, all right, well, that's good. It's good to have a winger depth. But he contributed quite a bit on the field last year. I think he had 8 or 9 total goal contributions, and he scored last week. What did it mean to see those players leave? And I think particularly about Jared Bartlett, who's a surprise to DC fans, sort of how quickly he's ingratiated himself and how solid he looks every single week.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll be able to judge how much they meant by the round of applause that I know they'll get at City Park this weekend. I know these fans here in St. Louis are really willing and excited to welcome these guys back because they understand what a huge undertaking last year was to come out and be an expansion team that had, externally, very low expectations. That was estimated to be at the bottom of the conference, but internally had the highest of expectations and went on a run to the most wins for an expansion team in MLS history and won the Western Conference title in the regular season. And what both of those guys did was absolutely phenomenal. I think Jared, over the course of all competitions, had 11 goal contributions, and Lucas made a dozen starts and appeared in 14 games. And really, you know, for both of them, epitomized exactly what the team ethos was. There's a part, one of my favorite parts, of the facility at City Park. There's a big wall that just says hustle. And Jared Stroud, I think at one point about 2/3 of the way through the season, there was a stat last year that showed he covered more ground at a high speed than any player in the MLS. And Lucas Bartlett, also a guy who just played extremely hard and who stepped in. You know, we just had last weekend, Tim Parker was scratched just for precautionary measures. And last year in the first five games, that happened as well. And it gave Lucas an opportunity to come in and show what he can do. And Lucas and Tim, you know, very close, good friends, and they have a lot in common, both very magnetic personalities. You know, Lucas was such a joy to work with, as was Jared here in the St. Louis area. And, you know, they had just many events with the fans where they would just light up the room, and very charismatic guys who made big impacts on the field. And, you know, I mean, it's players of value that interest other teams. And I know that DC United was very interested in both of them, and the opportunity came up to make the trade. But we miss them. You know, it's always hard to see the players from that first team, whether it's those two guys or a guy like Nico Gioacchini, who's now in Serie B in Italy, leave after making such huge contributions. But we're really appreciative of it. We miss them. And I know the fans are waiting with a very warm reception this weekend.
Poor Nico having to live on Lake Como. It's a real struggle for him to have to make that move.
I think his grandparents may be from that area or right around. So it's interesting. Obviously, it's a great place. It's an incredible, you know, area if you're just walking in and you don't know anything about it. But, you know, he was an Italian-American citizen, had an Italian passport. And so in some ways, a homecoming for him as well. And, you know, it's just an opportunity that was like with Lucas and Jared, very hard-earned.
You talked about some of the newcomers coming into this season, and I want to sort of focus on players that DC United should key in on during the match. And I probably can't start anywhere else other than Roman Berkey, who normally the DP goalkeeper is a bad move. It has historically in MLS has been somewhat disappointing. Not the case with him. Clearly had an amazing season last year. Team of the week last week, six saves against LA. It's not been the normal situation where a goalkeeper probably shouldn't allocate so much of your resources to that player, but he's been a stalwart for St. Louis since he's been here.
Yeah, he's been amazing. And interesting little twist here for you. He's actually not a DP. He is the highest
never was
player.
Or was he bought? Was he bought down? Is he a TAM player?
He is the most. He is the highest paid goalkeeper in the MLS still. 1.3 million or something like that, but he actually is not a DP. So I'll have to look into kind of what
the curse is removed. Then never mind.
Designated player or sort of his official designation is. But to your point, I mean, it's a lot of resources to allocate to a player. I think the payroll last year, which was the second lowest in the MLS, around $10 million. I mean, that's 13-14% really of what you're paying the entire team, but he's been worth every penny. I remember walking in for the first road trip when we were going down to Austin. It was February 24th, 2023, and having a chance to catch up with Lutz, who is a longtime professional goalkeeper all over the world himself, and just him saying Roman Berkey is going to be the best goalkeeper in the MLS and quite possibly the best goalkeeper in the history of the MLS. And, you know, of course, this is game one of 34. And you sort of, you know, from my perspective, I'm like, well, this is high praise, and will he live up to it? Of course, he goes out and wins the MLS Goalkeeper of the Year immediately and has come up with so many saves. It's just to watch him play is something incredible. There's usually a highlight, though in the first three, four games of the season, I thought the defense was so solid that he didn't have to be just Spider-Man out there. He didn't have to be slinging webs out there. But then against the LA Galaxy, and there were three goals that were scored. If you're just skimming box scores, you might say, well, you know, must have been a tough night for him. Of course, he wins the goalkeeper of the week and is on the team of the match day in the MLS because of the saves that he did make. And I mean, it was breathtaking, really, to watch him out there. Reflex saves, kick saves, opportunities that maybe the Galaxy should not have had. Obviously, they have great speed, awesome athleticism on that team, very good players. And he had to step up, and he answered that call to keep us in the game. I think it was Tomas Ostrak, who scored in the game after the game, said, Roman Berkey saved our butts. I'm not sure where this broadcast to, so I'm not sure I can say the synonym for
you can
saved
assume.
Our. But he said it, and I think that was really apt and really on point.
Who else from the roster, either new or sort of returning players, that should you seem to be most concerned about as we head into St. Louis this weekend?
Oh boy, concerned. I'm not concerned about any of them, but I'm excited for a lot of them to play against you. On your side, the guys you should be concerned with. Well, I mean, there's a lot to list. We've already talked about Chris Durkin, former DC United. You know, go up top and you look at what Sam Adeniran has been able to do this year. Scored a couple of goals, looking for his first in a couple of games now, but so dangerous. Has had great chances. Great, dynamic runner. Awesome. I mean, when he hits it, you know it. Even with the crowd going wild, you can hear his foot go into the ball. He had one that went high in LA in the last minutes. People right after the game were saying, I think that ball is still flying. I mean, when he cracks it, he really cracks it. Joao Klaus had 10 goals last year. Brazilian striker as well. Someone who's been playing in tandem with Sam Adeniran sometimes. Their minutes are staggered. But, I mean, there's incredible options across the field for St. Louis City SC. I'll tell you one that's been a little bit under the radar maybe last season, but who's really emerged this year is Celio Pompeu. Celio's done a fantastic job. He has at least one goal contribution in each of the last three games. Always when we need him as well. He scored late in a playoff game last year in Kansas City. He scored the game-tying goal 2 weeks ago in Austin. Came up with a corner kick that was tipped in. It ended up as an own goal against John McCarthy for the Galaxy, but it was a great service, just a blistered service from Pompeu. And so to see him emerge and to see him step up, very charismatic individual, good leader on the team, even though he's on the younger side, he also is just 24 years old. There's a lot of folks. There's a lot of people who are going to make contributions on the offensive side and on the defensive side as well. I mean, you got to give it up to him because he won the MLS goal of the match day. Joachim Nielsen, someone else who's flown under the radar. A lot of folks know about Tim Parker, who's the other center back and was on the best 11. And obviously give Parker a lot of credit. He's been phenomenal in his time in St. Louis. Nielsen was someone who we didn't see quite as much of last year. He was coming off a knee surgery that actually preceded his time arriving in St. Louis. And he was sidelined for, I think, a total of 15 months, including two-thirds of the year last year. And he came back. And obviously, you know how it is. They kind of work back from injury slowly and get reacclimated to things. But he's been a stalwart, a consistent presence over the last, I guess this is the fifth MLS game. He's been good for around 90 in each of the ones that we've played so far. He had an unbelievable finish, bicycled the goal home against the Galaxy. Great anticipation of the ball on the defensive end, plays well in the air on the offensive end, and can kind of sneak in on those corner kicks and really surprise you. But it's the angles that he cuts and the balls that he gets to on the defensive end. I think he's one of the elite defenders in the MLS. He's been on the Swedish national team. I think had something like 30 caps with them. Good veteran presence, 30 years old. And to have those two in the middle, it's a heck of an anchor to have.
I feel like St. Louis fans have gotten a little spoiled already here in a very short time. I think that not all expansion franchise fan groups have the same experience. But for those who are tuning in maybe for the first time or haven't watched a lot of home St. Louis games on Apple TV, what can we expect? Like, what's the vibe? It looks like it's pretty lively.
Insane. I mean, St. Louis, I grew up in St. Louis. I know St. Louis very well. My entire family is here. It's a soccer crazy city. I mean, it's one of the best soccer cities in the world. It's the soccer capital of America. And just through my childhood and even into my high school and college years, there were so many rumors and so much stop and go about getting an MLS team. And finally, when Carolyn Kindle, the Taylor family, were able to bring it to St. Louis, I think starting in about 2017-ish, kind of coming up with the plans and then building this incredible stadium, they did it right. They did it. If I had to just put one word on it, it would be they did it right. And they brought something to the city that wasn't, I think at one point, many years before, maybe 10, 12 years before the team came here to St. Louis, there was a plan to have a stadium that was like 30 miles outside of the city limits. And to have, something that was kind of a far-flung type of destination. And instead, they brought it right into the heart of downtown and made this an opportunity for everybody. And St. Louis is a pretty large area, you know, city and county, to come in and to have the opportunity to really go into the heart of downtown St. Louis and revitalize that area and to bring people from all backgrounds together, to bring people from a lot of different walks of life together. It's really a celebration And it's done a lot for the city. It's done a lot for the city, you know, in a way that goes beyond sports. And so I think that's reflected. I think it's reflected every time we see the 22,423. I sort of on my notes, as soon as I walk in, I already sort of check that off. Sell out once again here at City Park. And I'm sure I'll check it off on Saturday night as well, because what they've built is something that so many people want to be a part of. And, you know, I was just having coffee with a friend this morning, and he was saying, I still want to get down to a City game. It's hard sometimes to get the tickets because of the demand and how many people have, you know, become a huge part of this. So to see it and to see what's been built, to see how they've done it, as a citizen of St. Louis, not just as someone who works in sports or who kind of monitors sports, observes sports, but just as a citizen, it's really special.
So I always ask people to make a score prediction, which I think, given your position, is always a bit fraught. There's no chance you're gonna come out with a DC United 3-0 victory. But based on how things have gone so far this season, how do you see this game playing out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that right now the team is generating a lot of chances, and I think that one area that the guys are working really hard to sharpen up is finishing those chances. And I think that you know, that's going to come. I think we're looking for a couple of guys to find the back of the net right now, but the chances are definitely there. They've taken the fight to teams, done a great job, you know, with a very similar system to what they were running last year. A lot of high pressure, ball hunting, takeaways that generated opportunities, and also very good on set pieces. St. Louis was excellent on set pieces last year, one of the top teams in the MLS. We just saw the team score 2 goals off of corner kicks in Los Angeles. So I've loved what I've seen on that side. As I said, I think the defense is very much improved this year. You know, my scouting of DC United is ongoing. I've been looking at some film and looking at some tape. The game is at home here in St. Louis. You say 3-0 DC. I'm not gonna turn it around on you and say 3-0 City. I'll go ahead. I'll spot you one. I'll say 3-1. St. Louis wins it. I'll give you the same score as you guys had last time out on the coast against Luis Suarez and those guys.
Oh yeah, that could happen for sure. I think we haven't done our official score predictions. I'm going to say 2-2, based on sort of how LA went for you. We before last week we were generating chances. We had the highest XG in the league, and then Miami came and then we forgot how to do that so much.
Yeah.
So
and don't so we'll take see. Anything away from what Troy and the guys have built there in DC. I mean, I've been really impressed with that. I think they've got a guy who knows how to do it over the long term. And I think this is cool too, because as memory serves, I think this is the battle of a couple of former Red Bulls interim managers, Bradley Carnell a few years back, and Troy Lesain just last year, right, who were heading that up. So looking at kind of the systems and what comes out of the Red Bull, it seems fairly similar. But, you know, as Lutz and Bradley have talked about, that's part of the reason they do it. It's very entertaining, and it's a lot of fun to watch from a, you know, a spectator's perspective. So, I have a terrible track record of score predictions, knock on wood. I have never been amazing on the score predictions. But either way, I'm going to predict we're going to see a really fun, really fast-paced game.
I also a battle of coaches who wish people would stop saying energy drink soccer whenever they talk about them. I'm sure. I guarantee you that's a major commonality.
Yeah.
Joey, where can people find you other than the home broadcast button on Apple TV, which I will be utilizing this weekend?
John, I appreciate that, man. Always smash that home radio feed icon in the right-hand corner on Apple TV. We broadcast through Y98 here in St. Louis. You can find it on the Odyssey app by searching Y98. Of course, St. Louis SC is across social media at STL City SC. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Joey_Zanna. We're so proud to promote the MLS and to promote this great product. So we're just thankful to have the opportunity to welcome in so many DC fans. You know, I will be rooting for St. Louis City SC, but I've got such a soft spot for DC, for everything it's done for the MLS, for Jared Stroud and for Lucas Bartlett, and a lot of appreciation. So we're thankful to have all the folks who are going to be tuning in from out there on the coast. You know, I was out there in Fredericksburg, Virginia. I know what it's all about out there. I love the area, and we'd love to have you all on with our home radio broadcast as well.
Awesome. Joey Zanaboni, voice of St. Louis City SC. Hopefully we're going to have a good match. Both teams to score, I feel like, is at least if you're going to make a bet, that seems like a good one on this team. Joey, thank you so much for joining.
Hey, thank you, John. Appreciate it.